listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
Vannehill looking to throw. Lobs it to the near side of the field. Still snaps it from the touch. Into the open field. Touchdown, Dolphins!
That was Tom McCarthy of CBS on the call with the 60-yard touchdown pass from Ryan Tannehill to Kenny Stills as the Dolphins take down the Buffalo Bills for the first time in 2 years. Welcome back to the Finalysis podcast. My name is Travis Wingfield with Perfectville and Wright Travis Wright. And I'm joined by always as Kevin Dern, my fellow comrade here, taking care of the defensive side of the ball for us. Kevin, how you doing tonight, man?
Doing great. Another Dolphins victory on Sunday and get an extra week to enjoy it with the bye. Feels great.
It does. And it was exactly what we needed. You know, going into the bye at 2-5 was going to be a rough go. And now we have all these hopes of playoff dreams and winning streaks and a ground and pound type of style of football. So I'm looking forward to it, man. And Sunday was really unique for me in the sense that I don't feel like I've been that big of a fan, so to speak, in a long time, just kind of geeking out and getting excited about the team. How was your experience on Sunday? Were you excited about that game as I was?
Yeah, I loved every second of it. It's always nice to beat the Bills. Actually, one of my roommates in college, his wife is a diehard Buffalo Bills fan, Buffalo native, so she usually texts me some bullshit every time they get together, and I didn't hear a peep from her on Sunday, so that was nice. And, you know, even my girlfriend got a little excited, and, you know, she's a diehard Bengals fan, so, you know, just nice feeling to get a win over a division rival, and quite frankly, I feel like we should have beat them by even more.
Yeah, we definitely should have. You know, a lot of penalties, a lot of red zone mistakes, and we'll get to that later. But like you said, it was a lot of fun beating a division rival, especially a team that we've struggled with in the past. And to come back in that fashion, down by 11 points late in the third quarter, to go ahead and come back. And I also have a friend that's a Bills fan, too, and it was kind of nice to rub it in his face also. I also did the AFC East Bros podcast. It's a really good podcast available on iTunes for you guys. That's AFC East Bros with Kyle Smith and Gary Smith. And Kyle is a Jets fan, and Gary's a Bills fan. And so they welcomed me back on this week, and I got to give it to him a little bit. So that was nice. But yeah, so we're rolling on here. I believe this is the sixth episode so far of the Finalysis podcast as we roll on. And hopefully you're binge listening to us now, because we're going to go ahead and release six of these at one time. So thanks for staying with us, and we hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. You can go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating if you would. That would be fantastic. And don't forget to check out Welcome to Perfectville with Sam and Chris, our beloved host of that program. And they kind of started this whole ship, and we're continuing on and looking forward to the future with it, man. So, Kevin, you got some housekeeping for us to do here with a roster move we made tonight. Can you let us know what that's all about?
Yeah, so everyone kind of found out that Arian Foster retired right before Monday Night Football started last night, and Miami has filled that roster spot. They worked out some safeties today, ended up signing Bakari Rambo, who used to play for the Bills and the Redskins. He's a University of Georgia product, just like Rashad Jones. So that is our roster addition to fill Arian Foster's spot, and I'm sure we'll see some more roster gymnastics during the bye week and leading up to the Jets game as well.
Yeah, we definitely will, and we'll get to that more later with all the guys potentially coming back from IR and seeing what the team does with those guys. And yeah, so moving forward here with this one, the game on Sunday, man. What can we really say about this team? I mean, they were kind of left for dead after five games into the season, and now they've gotten turned around with two straight wins, sitting at 3-4 heading into the bye. What are your feelings about this team moving forward from this point?
Yeah, I think it's just nice to have some positive momentum. You know, I think from the beginning of the year, my thought process was to just kind of see how Adam Gase and his staff would be different from Joe Philbin's staff. And I think they've kind of proven that, you know, in a lot of ways, even if the overall record isn't quite, you know, a step up just yet. But I mean, you look at that murderer's row of the three of the first four games on the road against, you know, two Super Bowl contenders and the perennial playoff, you know, contender. You know, I think really the only game I feel really down about was that Tennessee game. I feel like that's a game Miami would like to have back. And, you know, as we kind of move on with the bye, you know, I think it's pretty cool to see the team playing a lot better, especially the last 2 weeks against Buffalo, who was the hottest team in the league with four straight wins. Really kind of took it to the Steelers. A lot of people kind of picked them as a potential Super Bowl candidate from the AFC before the season started. And, you know, I'm kind of interested to see what happens after the bye. I think the coaching staff has made a lot of good changes on both sides of the ball for a change. Miami's finally starting to get healthy, and we're getting reinforcements back. And then, you know, I'm always kind of a realist, but, I mean, if you look at that schedule in the second half, you know, right now as it stands, the only teams with winning records are Buffalo, who we just kind of bludgeoned to death 2 days ago, and then the Patriots, who we don't see until the finale. So, you know, I think it kind of sets up well for Miami if they can kind of keep on this wave of good play.
It does, and it's kind of funny looking back to the schedule release when it came out back in April, and everyone was kind of upset with the opponents we had drawn with the road games in Cincinnati, New England, and Seattle, because everyone thought that that meant 1-3 start for sure, you know, at best, if we even beat the Browns, which we almost didn't. But looking back at it now, you know, giving this team time to gel and kind of find its identity on offense, it was probably the biggest blessing we could have had with the Adam Gase system finally seeming like it's taking hold a little bit, you know, the running game getting going, and Ryan Tannehill playing more of a Alex Smith role, if you will, and then the defense really turning it on and kind of finding their legs in terms of the scheme and who's getting the snap counts and who should be on the field more, and they're kind of getting their feel for which personnel is working out the best. And, you know, that kind of brings us into our next topic of discussion, which will be the defensive film review. Now, Kevin, you had a chance to watch this game late last night on the Game Pass, and I don't know about you, but I watched it today, at least the offensive side of the ball, and it was a fun rewatch, man. Like, it's this team is so much more fun to watch when they're playing, you know, sound fundamental football. And there's a lot of things I got to clean up, but I had a fun time rewatching this game. And how did you feel about the rewatch on the defensive side?
Yeah, I thought the most interesting part is, you know, I usually try and watch every play two or three times. And, you know, the cool part is you kind of see something different from each player, you know, the more you watch it. You know, I really thought Jordan Phillips played probably the best game he's played as a Dolphin so far in his year and a half of being on the team. You know, he and Richie Incognito, everyone remembers Richie.
Yep.
He's actually a great Twitter follow, by the way. But, you know, he and Richie Incognito kind of got into it, especially in the fourth quarter. And it was really neat to see Phillips kind of just wear him down and kind of beat him into submission. Usually, you know, for all Richie's misgivings, he's a damn good football player. And to kind of see him get taken down like that was pretty cool. And, you know, obviously we saw some nice plays from some guys that stepped up. I thought Tony Lippett played his best game as a Dolphin as well. You know, Andre Branch and Cameron Wake really got after it. We kind of saw Mario Williams that we were, you know, we thought we were getting. You know, I think the only other time we've seen him in that kind of fashion was the week one game in Seattle when he was chasing Russell Wilson all over the place. So, you know, it was good to see him play a hard fought defensive game. And, you know, the score was closer than it really was. And I think, you know, we'll touch on that with the special teams and the penalties. But defensively, I think that was their best performance of the season by far.
Yeah, and I do want to put the special teams at the end of the episode because they were awful and they almost cost us the game in more ways than one, really, with the block putt and all that stuff they had going on. But I did want to ask you a couple of questions about some of the players because I was curious to see with some of these – some guys getting some more snaps, like I mentioned earlier. And one of the guys I had written down was Neville Hewitt. Did you get much of a chance to spotlight Neville Hewitt in this game at all?
Yeah, he actually played quite a bit. He played 27 of the 57 defensive snaps that they had. And, you know, I think Vance Joseph and Matt Burke, the linebackers coach, they're kind of right on the money with him. You know, they play him a lot in the base packages, and Buffalo's offense, you know, they ran a lot of tight end sets and they use a fullback. They're one of the few teams that does. So that kind of lent Miami to being in their base package quite a bit more than normal. I think they've really identified that he's a better run stopper than Jelani Jenkins. And to be able to get him, you know, get him on the field more is a plus for Miami. I thought he played pretty well. You know, he made tackles when they were there. Nothing really stand out, but there were a few times when he dropped into coverage where I thought he was a little bit more, you know, on his P's and Q's you know, being close to his man or in the appropriate zone as compared to the week before with Pittsburgh, where, you know, there were a couple completions, I think, to the tight ends twice, where he just kind of got lost in space. And to see him tighten that up over, you know, a week was a good sign, good step in the right direction.
Yeah, and you had mentioned on a previous show about how these guys were giving snaps to a lot of bad football players and how it seems like they're kind of getting that corrected. And one of the players we'd highlighted in a previous show was Jelani Jenkins. And that way he, you know, we read a lot of rumors and things off message boards that we're on almost constantly and during the workday and everything. But one thing we read about Jelani Jenkins was his inability to prepare and his lack of just overall giving a damn about the game. And so it was kind of nice for me to see him in more of a sub-package role rather than like a starter role where he's playing the majority of the snaps. Did you notice the same things there with Jelani Jenkins, or am I off base on that?
No, I mean, that's kind of been the trend with him this year. You know, really ever since the Cleveland game, he's been more of a sub-package player. I think it's pretty clear that he's not, you know, fully 100% healthy. You know, we kind of saw him pull up at the tail end of that Steelers game. I thought this game he was actually pretty good. He made a couple decent plays in the run game. His coverage was pretty on point. You didn't really notice him, good or bad. You know, I think he is what he is at this point. And, you know, linebacker is one of those spots where, you know, I really don't know if Miami's in a position to really make a trade. But if you were going to add a veteran linebacker presence, I feel like it's going to be at the expense of Jelani Jenkins getting more snaps. But I think limiting him to pass coverage snaps has been a nice thing. And he played 28 of the 57 snaps, so only one more than Hewitt. And, you know, if you look at the straight math of it, Tyrod Taylor had 28 pass attempts. So, you know, you kind of figure most of those were probably in three wide or passing situations. So I think it's good that they've kind of figured out this rule, dual role with Hewitt and Jenkins. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues against the Jets after the bye.
Well, yeah, hats off to Vance Joseph for that. I know you were quite a big supporter of Vance Joseph, at least when we first hired him, and then he had that little hiccup early in the year. But it seems like his defense is kind of catching on a little bit here as the season wears on. What are your thoughts towards Vance Joseph at this point?
Just from hearing some things about him when he was in Cincinnati and even some of his stops before that, I loved him. If you actually go back two off seasons ago, when Jack Del Rio left Denver to be the head coach of the Raiders, Denver's first choice to replace him as defensive coordinator was actually Vance Joseph, and the Bengals actually blocked that move, and Denver ended up hiring Wade Phillips, who is actually Vance Joseph's mentor. They were together in Houston earlier in Vance's career. But, you know, everything I'd heard about him in Cincinnati was that he knows how to game plan. He knows how to get guys prepared. You know, the Cincinnati secondary was one of the best in the league the last 2 years. They've kind of recycled themselves, and they have Kevin Coyle running the show in the secondary now. And they've definitely taken a drop off from that. Obviously losing Reggie Nelson hurts, but I mean, you know, Vance, I think he's done a great job of learning from what hasn't worked. I think the defense is kind of starting to take hold. You know, they really hit that bottom point kind of against Tennessee. And, you know, he's really done a nice job of getting players in the right positions and then also adjusting the personnel. You know, obviously we've seen Andre Branch and Cameron Wake started the last two games. We've seen the rotation of Hewitt and Jenkins. You know, I think he's just done a really good job that way. And I think he did a nice job against Buffalo to protect Michael Thomas. I think that was kind of, you know, every Dolphins fan kind of knew that was going to be the weak link on the defense. And, you know, it did bite us once on the long touchdown to Goodwin. But, I mean, it could have been a lot worse. And I think he did a nice job with the scheme on Sunday.
Yeah, and you mentioned Michael Thomas in that long touchdown that went over Byron Maxwell and him. And, you know, I don't know who exactly was to blame for that. But the secondary appears to be playing a lot better. And, you know, Maxwell's been up and down and much maligned for much of the season. And, well, or, you know, rightfully so, because he has been rough in a few of these games. But you mentioned Tony Lippert earlier. Bobby McCain's getting a lot of snaps still. We got potentially Chris Culliver coming back after the bye week. Benay Benwickery should be ready to go after the bye week. And then also Xavien Howard might be ready to go. So what's the direction with the secondary and how they've been playing lately?
Yeah, I think you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially with Bakari Rambo. He's one of those guys that you can probably play him in the box or as a single high safety, which is pretty much exactly what Detroit did with Issa Abdul-Kaddous last year. I think prior to Rashad Jones being out, Miami kind of used them interchangeably. You know, there are certain times when you wanted Rashad Jones back deep and Issa Abdul-Kaddous' speed coming on a blitz. There's certain times when you want Rashad Jones in the box and, you know, want to have that bigger size against the run. So I think it'll be interesting there. As far as the secondary goes in terms of the corners, you know, I think Bobby McCain's job in the slot is pretty well locked down at this point. You know, Tony Lippett, at this point, it'd be hard for me to bench him. He's played pretty well the past 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
Maxwell, you know, he did a great job against Antonio Brown, but kind of struggled against the speed of Marquise Goodwin, you know, at a couple times, like the first play of the game. Goodwin actually gets him completely turned around the wrong way and makes a catch for a first down. I think if he keeps getting better, you know, he's probably got enough talent to remain the starter. I think Ben Wickery is a guy, you know, you could make him the number three guy on the perimeter, and he can also play slot in the dime packages. You know, maybe Michael Thomas will go back there if Bakari Rambo pans out, but, you know, that's where I kind of look for him. You know, I think Chris Culver, you know, he's a guy you can probably use as good depth. Maybe if he rounds into form, he can end up starting at some point over either of those guys. I've heard it suggested that they may even try and look at him as sort of a deep safety candidate in some packages. Really, I think it just depends on how healthy those guys are. But I think the long and short of it is, you know, Chimdi Chukwuma, his roster spot's probably not safe for very much longer. Jordan Lucas, he's been pretty much a special teams guy. I don't know if you can really find a roster spot for him unless you really keep him as a core special teams guy. But the secondary did pretty well. You know, Tyrod Taylor, he only completed 50% of his passes in the game. You take away that 67-yard touchdown. He was 13 of 27 for 154 yards. I think you can live with that.
Absolutely.
You know, Miami had four sacks on him. I think they had 7 or 8 knockdowns and 10 or 11 pressures. So overall, it was a really good day. Other than the big pass to Marquise Goodwin for the touchdown.
Yeah, and it's fun to see this defensive line get after these quarterbacks that are mobile, because it seems like in the past that's been our biggest bugaboo in terms of the defensive front is handling these athletic quarterbacks that can move the pocket around a little bit. In terms of the cornerbacks, though, you know, it seems like one of those things where you hope that the sum is greater than the the sum of
I know what you're trying to say.
It'll come to me soon enough. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, these corners, there's not one or two that really stands out on the top of your mind. But you hope that with competition and practice and in camp, that they can kind of elevate their level of their play to a higher level. And I think that hopefully one of them will kind of rise to the top in that sense. But getting back to the defensive line, you know, this was a group that dominated most of the game from my perspective. Like you said earlier, we had Richie Incognito getting walked back from Jordan Phillips several times when the pass became the only option the Bills had late in the game there. So I'm curious what some of your thoughts were on the defensive line with Cam Wake and Dominican Sue and those big boys.
Yeah, so, you know, just looking at the game and knowing that Buffalo was the top rushing team in the NFL, they came into that game averaging 166 yards rushing. Miami held them to 67 total, so nearly 100 yards off of their game average for the season, and they did that on 22 carries, so just over 3 yards per carry. But you go down and you break that down even further, you know, LeSean McCoy had 8 carries for 11 yards. You know, I know they were hyping him up in the pregame. Miami owned him. Gillis Lee had 5 carries for 20 yards, which is, you know, combined with McCoy, the two of them had 31 yards on 13 carries. You know, if you can limit the other team's top two backs to under 30 yards or right around 30 yards, you'll take that all day, every day. And if you break down Gillis Lee even further, he had one 20-yard run and another 4 carries that totaled a net of 0 yards. Then you look at Tyrod Taylor, who was the other ball carrier in that game. I think Reggie Bush had the 1 carry late. Felton had 1 carry. But Taylor led the team with 7 carries for 35 yards. He had that 10-yard run on the touchdown play where, you know, Cameron Wake, we've kind of touched on it the last few episodes. He's susceptible to either crashing too far in or getting too far upfield, and that option play faked him out. But if you take away that from Taylor, you know, he had another 6 carries for 25 yards, and that was mostly all on scrambles. And, you know, that was one thing Vance Joseph had touched on all the way back in the Seattle game with Russell Wilson, and again before the Buffalo game, was don't let them beat you with your legs. And Miami did a really nice job of putting pressure on them and limiting long gains all day long. I think there's some kind of sneaky plays you see in there. You know, if you go back and you watch, it's actually the second play of the game. Buffalo got that first down on the first play with the pass to Goodwin. If you watch the second play, it's a little delayed handoff to LeSean McCoy. And they actually do something interesting where they pull Eric Wood in the center and they sort of read Andre Branch. And he actually logs Andre Branch and puts him on the ground. Andre Branch actually still makes the tackle on that play and trips up LeSean McCoy. So there were some sneaky good plays like that by him throughout the game. I thought Jordan Phillips did a nice job of getting penetration and keeping guys clean, you know, keeping Kiko Alonso and Donald Butler clean. I thought Donald Butler played a heck of a game. You know, one of the notes I wrote down on Sunday was he's Koemisi with more speed. He sets a really hard edge. He fills gaps well. I thought that was nice. You know, Mario Williams had a great game. He stopped Gillis Lee's direct snap play in that sort of pseudo-wildcat formation for a 10-yard loss. And then on the day, Williams had 2 quarterback hits, 2 tackles for loss, and 4 pressures. Did a really good job of setting the edge against the run. I think Andre Branch kind of, you know, did some underrated work against Cordy Glenn. Glenn's one of the more underrated tackles in the league, in my opinion.
And
he's a big dude at 345. And, you know, before the season started, you kind of saw Andre Branch, and really the only pressure he would get is if he was unblocked or if it was, you know, the quarterback was scrambling and he could use his athleticism. Well, in the game against Buffalo, you kind of saw him work a speed to power and try and get an inside move on him. He actually tried to pull off Jason Taylor's patented long arm move against Cordy Glenn. It almost worked. I think just Glenn's sheer size kind of saved him on that. So, you know, he only had a half a sack this week. But I thought he did pretty good work in the game. And he actually played 45 of the 57 snaps, which was second on the defensive line, only to Ndamukong Suh. And Ndamukong Suh played 54 of the 57 snaps, 95%. He had a great game. I thought he could have had another 2 or 3 tackles for loss, another sack in there. He had Tyrod Taylor in the grasp early, and Taylor got away. You know, that's going to happen. But, you know, they did a really nice job. I thought they did a good job of rotating guys in. Phillips played 35 snaps. Wake and Williams played 32 apiece. Jason Jones played 13. I thought one of the cool things they did was they really adjusted with some of their pass rush packages. And, you know, I don't know if you saw that during the game, but we kind of saw them. Jason Jones, Cameron Wake, and Mario Williams actually all took snaps as defensive tackles in some of their nickel and third down packages. They did one pretty cool stunt where they actually used Andre Branch as a stand-up linebacker and ran a pretty wicked stunt that would have gone for a sack, but the play had been blown dead for a delay of game. And then this stat, I found it after the game, was kind of one that really surprised me. But the Dolphins actually have the best third down defense in the NFL through 7 weeks.
How did that happen? Where did that come from?
Yeah, which just baffled me. Teams have had 96 third down chances against Miami. They've converted 30, so that's 31%. Wow. You know, I think, and, you know, you can kind of comment on this one, the offensive side of the ball, but we really saw some good complementary football where, you know, this defense is able to stop Buffalo. They didn't really get to play with the lead, but you kind of got the sense Miami had the momentum, and especially in that fourth quarter, if you can do that and keep them fresh, this pass rush will tee off on anybody. You know, I mean, I think Andy Dalton and Marcus Mariota are the only two quarterbacks that haven't been hurt or have not left a game against us so far this year. So I thought that was a nice thing. You know, you look at the play where Ndamukong Suh got a sack. He's actually lined up at defensive end, and they end up dropping Cameron Wake and Andre Branch into coverage. Suh gets doubled, and then he just clubs the right guard, John Miller, and basically falls in there and gets a sack on Taylor. And Vance Joseph even said, you know, after the game on Monday, that he was actually a decoy. The real pressure was supposed to come from Bobby McCain on a slot blitz. And Sue is just that good where he can just bludgeon you and come in and get a sack. So, you know, I thought they did a really nice job doing that. You know, he had two sacks, or like I said, he could have had another two sacks and two tackles for loss. I thought they did a great job of containing Tyrod Taylor. You know, Jason Jones made a nice play and ran him down for a sack. You know, overall, I thought it was just their best game of the season. I thought Kiko Alonso played really well. You didn't see a lot of false steps or false keys or misreads. Really, the only comment I had for him was, you know, he's in those passing lanes a lot, but he never gets his hands up. Not really sure why that is, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they work on that over the bye and maybe he gets a tip or a pick in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him kind of get the turnover game going like he had in Buffalo's rookie year when he had, I don't know how many picks it was, but he had several picks and was looking like a rookie of the year candidate there for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled when you mentioned the Cam White crashing hard thing. I specifically recall watching that play where Tyrod had the touchdown run, and you see Cam come, he just blows off the line and comes crashing in so hard, and it was too easy for Tyrod Taylor. So it's kind of what you love about Wake and kind of what you got to, you know, take your medicine with him too at the same time.
Yeah.
You mentioned Andre Branch earlier, and I saw a stat on the Fins today, and I can't remember who posted it. I want to say it was KB on the Fins.com, but regardless, it was comparing Olivier Vernon to Andre Branch. And I know that comparing sack totals is not necessarily indicative of who's the better pass rusher, obviously, because, you know, you get home one time out of 60 snaps. It's not really giving them credit for the other snaps we're taking out there. But in double the pass rush snaps, or I should say half the pass rush snaps for Andre Branch, he has three sacks to Olivier Vernon's one. So
yeah.
How's that for, you know, getting the best bang for your buck while Olivier Vernon's making J.J. Watt money and Andre Branch is over here on a pretty small veteran deal? So very good move there from Tannenbaum, which I didn't think I'd be saying that very much this year, but that one's worked out pretty well. Another note was you mentioned the Reggie Bush single run he had for a touchdown, and I wanted to overturn that. It looked like he was down before the goal line, and I didn't really care because at that point the game was over for me. But I want him to overturn it because I'm so sick of these former Dolphins coming back to, you know, Sun Life or whatever the heck the stadium's called now.
And Hard Rock.
Yeah, well, yeah. But seeing these guys just, like, get in the end zone and celebrate on us and stuff, and I think they had five of their six captains were former Dolphins, so it's good to see Rex Ryan get it stuck back in his face to beat them in Miami finally.
Yeah.
So that was my final point. So, I mean, you talked a lot about the defense, and I don't really have any more questions for you. Is there anything else you want to talk about with the defense?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I wrote down my overall notes. You know, I thought they played a really good game. You know, Buffalo throws a lot at you. They have the zone read, the wildcat. They're one of the few teams, I think only the second team Miami's seen all year, that really uses a true fullback. They have a lot of speed outside. You know, I thought Miami did good, and, you know, we kind of touched on it. There's some reinforcements on the way. You know, it sounds like Earl Mitchell can kind of get back in the rotation after the bye as well. Really, I thought it was pretty impressive that Miami, you know, didn't get down by more than that 17-6 margin, because, you know, you kind of couple it with the special teams. You know, they ended up, Buffalo started a drive on the 30-yard line of Miami after a bad punt return by Brandon Tate. Another side note, Tate's actually a pretty cool guy. I've got to meet him a couple times. And one of my coworkers used to be his neighbor when he was here in Cincinnati. And then, you know, the blocked punt fiasco after the penalty on that, you know, started Buffalo at the 40. So you're basically gifting them, you know, 10 points off those drives with field position. And then the final drive of the game, you know, Byron Maxwell gets a taunting penalty on a third down. Jason Jones gets a late hit out of bounds on a third down.
Yeah.
And then we had another pass interference. You know, that last drive shouldn't have happened, in my opinion. And, you know, Gase said that's one thing he wants to clean up. And, you know, really, I think Miami probably could have won that game 28-17. But all in all, it was a really good performance. Garbage touchdown for Buffalo at the end. But, you know, you take a win over your division rival, you get it. I'm pretty thrilled with that performance. And hopefully it's something they can really build on, you know, after the bye.
Yeah, you know, it was tough to see them close the game that way out because they played so well and they earned that victory. And, you know, I was texting with you and Chris and Sam as well on Sunday, as we are one to do during the game, kind of getting the live hot takes or the reactions, so to speak. And when they were making those mistakes at the end of the game, we were just like, are you kidding me? Like, are we really going to give this back to you right now? So I'd like to see him clean it up. And, you know, I had mentioned to you guys in the text that we – Chris and Sam were pretty down on the team. I don't know how you were feeling. My brother was texting me. He was pretty down. But I was like, just give it time. You know, we're leaning on these guys. We're going to knock them out eventually. It's, you can't play 60 minutes of getting ran like that and really hold up. So good on the Dolphins for committing to that plan and coming back and winning that game. So, and, you know, that kind of leads into the running game. I'm going to get to a Jay Ajayi, if you don't mind, Kevin, unless you got anything else you wanted to talk about.
No, I'm all good.
All right, buddy. I'm chomping at the bit because this is my, you know, you go back a couple episodes, and I hope someone that's listening to this has listened to three or four in a row, because I think I asked for it the past 3 weeks for a power running game, and my prayers have been answered immediately, which is so rare to happen with the Dolphins. You know, usually we like a player in the draft or a free agent player that we covet, and of course the team never goes out and signs them, but turning into the best running team in the league the past 2 weeks really has been quite a sight to see for the Dolphins. So I actually wrote an article today for Welcome to Perfectville on the blog portion, right, Travis Wright, saying the next NFL superstar is Jay Ajayi, because I got a chance to watch his film today, and I did some screen grabs and broke down some of his runs and what's making him special. And you just look at some of the things he can do with his feet. And, you know, I don't really know how much soccer he did play when he was in England or even coming over to the States at age 7, because he was born in England and then he came to the East Coast in when he was 7 years old. And his feet, man, his feet are so explosive and choppy and jittery, and every adjective I can think of positively to describe them, they're that. And you see it when he gets in and out of holes really quickly. He's got that vision to identify those holes and to hit them hard. And the way he kind of starts with that Edgerrin James style of stretch zone run play, and then they work off that with some man concepts as well. But the way that he gets his wheels going, it reminds me of Derrick Henry at Alabama last year. And, you know, I don't think that Henry's better than Ajayi at this point. I don't really know who is because there's not enough evidence. But in terms of running against college defenses like Henry was, that's what Ajayi looks like the last couple of weeks, the way he's powering through contact and continuing to gain yards after he's getting hit. I mean, Sunday he had 124 yards after contact in the game alone. His 4.3 yards per contact average for the year is best in the NFL. I mean, this guy is on a run that's historic, really, and I feel like it's not getting enough attention, or at least as much attention as it should, because Earl Campbell, O.J. Simpson, and Ricky Williams, the only guys that have ever done this before. And I watched a good portion of, well, I DVR'd them because I don't watch these shows, but like the Pardon the Interruption and Around the Horn and just all the mainstream media shows that are available on ESPN, I recorded them to see if they would mention it because I was curious, and it didn't happen. I mean, he didn't even get a mention. The guy runs for 418 yards in back-to-back games and doesn't even get mentioned. So whatever with that, he's a stud. We found him, and I think he's going to be the answer going forward, at least for the rest of the year, and hopefully he can hold up health-wise and we don't run him into the ground the way we did Ricky. So I'm really impressed with Ajayi. Do you have any thoughts you want to go ahead and bounce off on Ajayi? I mean, it was a pretty impressive performance.
Yeah, you know, I almost hate to make this comparison just because, you know, this player and the offense they were in, at least the running aspect of the offense, were so prolific. But, you know, just seeing his ability to kind of stop and cut back and still have that physical presence almost kind of reminds me of Terrell Davis with the Denver Broncos, you know, back in 98, 99, you know, when they won those two Super Bowls. And, you know, I understand that the running concepts are, you know, basically a page right out of the Indianapolis Colts playbook back when they had Edge and Peyton and all those guys. You know, you can thank Clyde Christensen for that. But, you know, Terrell Davis was really the guy that popped into my mind, you know, kind of similar size, good cutback ability. You know, I think Terrell Davis was like a fifth or sixth round draft pick. You know, Ajayi fell in the draft. So, you know, I don't know. I kind of thought a little bit of Terrell Davis. Don't know if Ajayi is there yet, you know, kind of has to sustain this success over, you know, the course of a season or two. But that's kind of who I thought of, you know, after Sunday's game.
I'm curious to see the reaction he gets when he has like a 15 carry for a 60-yard game and everyone's like, oh, get rid of this bum, you know.
Yeah.
The typical fan speak. But, I mean, no, the way he runs behind those pads, man, the way he creates after contact, and he gets skinny in the hole without losing acceleration. And that sounds like a dirty comment, but it's actually a football comment. You know, he really gets himself small and then explodes through that hole, and he's tough to bring down. And please go look at that article on Welcome to Perfectville, because it really illustrates how he is getting through these tackles, and you kind of have to see it. I can't really explain it to you, so please check that out. As for the rest of the running backs, I have two notes on Damian Williams, and I actually was surprised to see his snap count, because Arian Foster, we'll go ahead and just touch on him first. Arian Foster had 18 of the 73 snaps on offense.
Most of those were third downs, right?
They were. And that crucial third down drop, which to me was like a game ender at that point. Like, there's no way this Dolphins team is built to sustain a big blow like that and then come back and answer back, which they did emphatically. So good on them for that. But that drop was crucial. So he's gone now. He retired. And I think Damian Williams is probably the next guy in line to get those third down snaps. Because with the six snaps that he had one carry that drove me absolutely nuts, where he had a hole up the middle and he bounced the play outside and got tackled for a 1 yard gain. I thought he had at least five or six up the middle, so I was very frustrated by that. However, he answers back on the same drive, and that touchdown run he had was ridiculous. He gets contacted around the 10 yard line, shrugs through it, and then creates a pile at the five and just pushes the pile into the end zone for a touchdown and a huge touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown to actually put us ahead in the game. So very impressed with him on that. Kenyon Drake did get two snaps. So the running backs, it's clear what their plan is and why wouldn't it be the Jay Ajayi show. And I'll be curious to see how those snaps get divvied up in the game against the Jets coming up in 2 weeks. I'd imagine Damian Williams gets the bulk of the Arian Foster load that he shouldered. But, you know, that kind of speaks to the way this team's playing again with, you know, you mentioned the defense had, was it 57 plays?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the offense runs 73. That's the recipe for success, man. If you do that, you're going to win a lot of games because, you know, it's hard to score points if you're not in the field, and that's what the Dolphins are doing right now. So, you know, good on them for that. Again, running the ball super well. You mentioned the third down conversion rate of the defense. Well, the offense was 5 for 12, which it's not great, but it's definitely going to get the job done, especially with some of the big third downs like the Ryan Tannehill touchdown pass to Kenny Stills. So that's the run game and some of the stats there. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the offensive line's performance, leading Ajayi to the performance that he had. You know, the 124 yards after contact was awesome, and it's all pretty much all on Jay Ajayi. But you got to give credit to the offensive line too, because he did have 214. So some of those yards are coming from just scheme and good blocks. And I heard a podcast today, the Move the Sticks podcast with Daniel Jeremiah and Bookie Brooks on NFL Media, and Daniel Jeremiah said that Mike Pouncey is the best center in the league. And I thought that might have been a bit of a stretch, but watching the tape in this game, he played amazing, man. They trust him to do so much in the running game. The way he can get out and reach block, he can get out to a three technique with ease. I mean, he's super athletic, and he has a good explosion off the ball. He had two key dig-out blocks. One was a 14-yard run, I believe, by Ajayi, where he dug out the nose guard, and the mesh point was about to get disrupted, and he comes in at the last second and removes, I think it was Kyle Williams from the play. Just super impressive player from Pouncey there. And then Jermone Bushrod in the run game, which, you know, we speculated early in the year that Bushrod was on this lineup to pass protect, and he actually had a pretty crappy game from a pass protection standpoint. The team allowed 10 pressures on 31 dropbacks, and I could be wrong because I'm doing this on my own. I don't really have a fallback, but Jermone Bushrod allowed 3 of those 10 pressures in the passing game. But in the running game, he was combo blocking like a fool. Just him and Laremy Tunsil both were hitting combo block after combo block, and they were pulling and they were getting out in space. But on those combo blocks, you know, they're chipping Williams on the inside or whoever else may have been in there, and then getting to the second level on the linebackers and taking care of Zach Brown and Lorenzo Alexander, who have been two of the best linebackers. Excuse me. They've been two of the best linebackers in the league this year, and they're getting erased on a good number of plays by this rookie left guard and this veteran right guard who's only ever played tackle in the league. So the interior of the offensive line was outstanding in this game. Brandon Albert played well also. I don't have any complaints with him. He was good in pass protection, and he walled off some good edges and sealed some edges there in the running game, opening some alleys for Ajayi. And then Juwan James, to me, had his best game of the year. He was getting it done in the running game. They have this technique they use where they kind of latch onto a guy and then they'll spin him in a certain direction depending on which way the run goes. I don't really know the name for that technique or whatever, but it was impressive to see because he gets his long arms from the guys and he spins them and takes them out of the hole. And from there, it's all Ajayi breaking tackles from defensive backs. So a fantastic performance from the offensive line, the running game. I mean, you run for 240 yards or whatever it was, you're going to have some good things to say. So that group was awesome for me. Do you have any comments on the offensive line and the running game you want to go ahead and throw in, Kevin?
As far as the offensive line goes, I was really impressed with Tunsil and Albert on the left side. You know, they picked up a couple stunts. I know Tunsil's been, you know, has had some issues with that in the past, so I was pretty pleased to see what they did. It's amazing to me that a 316-pound human being can move that quickly and as well as he does. You know, really, I thought the thing that was interesting is, and you know, maybe this is jumping a little too far ahead, you know, down the road with the Jets coming up, they're the best run defense we've seen all season to this point. But Adam Gase said, you know, on his Monday press availability that, you know, over the bye they were going to work on kind of disguising some of the formations and motions they do to help the running game. I was just kind of curious to get your thoughts on, you know, how you think, I would say one, Jakeem Grant fits into that because, you know, we saw what happened to him when they did the fake jet sweep on the Damien Williams touchdown. And then, you know, do you have any thoughts about Kenyon Drake coming in? I kind of envision him as more of a receiving back. So maybe some of him, you know, being used on some screens and stuff. Just what's your take on that?
I was going to get into Marquise Gray's blocking at tight end next, but I'm glad you pivoted because I have a pretty good size notes here on the coaching staff and the way they performed on Sunday. And one of the notes I have is I wrote down jet sweep to Jakeem Grant froze the entire defense. And you saw it. I mean, I think it was the Williams touchdown run where it happened, where he comes in motion across the formation and the linebackers are flat-footed when the ball is getting handed off, which means the offensive line has a great advantage at that point. So I think they're really starting to get some more personnel and some more packaging. And you know, we kind of thought that was going to happen in the draft when we took, you know, Kenyon Drake and Jakeem Grant and all these speed guys. And then you have Leonte Carew, who can obviously do some physical things on the edge for you in the perimeter, as well as hopefully in the blocking game too at some point. But I think it's hard to expect a lot from these rookies early on. And now you're getting into game 6, game 7, game 8, and they're having some more seasoning and they're kind of learning the NFL way and the NFL lifestyle. And so they're starting to get on the field. So I think you're right with that. They sprinkled in a lot of, well, at least two design runs with Ryan Tannehill that I can think of. And I think they're kind of trying to make that a little bit more of a focal point, because when he gets running, he's a more rhythm quarterback and he's a little more accurate and gets into the feel of the game, into the flow of the game, excuse me. And I think that possibly Kenyon Drake could have some work as a zone read option type of guy where, you know, Tannehill's back there in the gun with him and they're kind of just reading the defensive end with both of their speeds and skill sets back there because they can both do both of those things. One other coaching note, we'll go ahead and just continue on that. You know, you watch the game tape compared to Joe Philbin's game tape and Bill Lazor's game tape, and the stark contrast is just ridiculous. I mean, the route concepts and the way they're attacking zone coverages, and the Bills sometimes on like a third down would have these soft zone coverages where they're kind of guarding the sticks, and you know that's a very common defense in the NFL. But a lot of times there's triangles in this league where you'll have a guy over the top and then two underneath on either side protecting a particular route. And the way Adam Gase's route concepts and route tree works is that he likes to stretch those triangles just enough so there's tight windows for the quarterback to fit the ball into. And Tannehill's pretty good at that. He's got the strong arm and he can really squeeze a tight window. So the coaching was much better in this game, not in the Steelers game, but the last two games has been a lot better than it was the first month or so of the season. And then, I mean, the variations of the packages and the formations the offenses are running is pretty impressive because we're going heavy set a lot. I mean, Marquise Gray had, where's he at here, 62 snaps out of 73, and Dom Jones had 29, and then Sam Young had 7 on the offensive line, so as a sixth lineman, so they're running a lot of heavy sets with Ajayi. They're pounding the ball in between the tackles, and they're getting even some plays are having double pulls where the tight end comes across the formation as well as a guard that pulls across. So they're doing a lot of exotic stuff in the running game, and I think it's only going to go ahead and continue from there. And it's really exciting to see because I haven't been this excited about a coaching staff in a long time. I liked Adam Gase when we hired him, but it was a slow start. But now you're starting to see some of those things that we expected from him with the Chicago offense as well as the Denver offense the past couple of years. Excuse me, that's like something in my throat that I'm having a hard time on. But
it's the taste of victory.
Exactly, it's a good taste. So they're taking full advantage of the personnel. I hope that we continue to see that because it's been a pretty good 2-week stretch. But in the passing game, one thing I noticed was in breaking routes seem to be Ryan Tannehill's strength, and he's a lot of these in like digs or slants, he's putting the ball right between the numbers and it very rarely goes inaccurate. So I'm hoping to see from some more of that. There was a play where they ran motion across the formation and the running back went to the flat. And it sets up nicely because on some plays they'll run the play action boots where they're attacking those two levels of the field, like I mentioned earlier, the short area and the intermediate area, and then Tannehill has the option to run as well. Well, they run a fake off of that where they're faking the throw to the flats, and then they have a dig or a slant to the inside, and Tannehill's just so precise on those. So I like where they're going with this offense. It seems like they kind of scaled it back, and they're getting back to basics, you know, setting up plays, you know, thinking in the future, Bobby Fischer style, like chess expert. So I think there's a lot to look forward to with that and the coaching staff. So I'm encouraged by Gaze. How are you feeling about Coach Gaze right now? I know you like Joseph, but what are you thinking about Adam Gaze?
Honestly, most of the opinions I formed kind of came after hearing some people talk about him. I had heard Ian Wharton talk about him. I heard C.K. Parrott from the Finns message board talk about him on a different podcast. Actually, both of them talked on the same podcast, different episodes. They both seemed to be intrigued by him. I don't know if he was necessarily the odds-on favorite in my book, but knowing that he comes from that Coach Saban background, you know, that kind of, you know, I know Nick Saban is a dirty word for Dolphins fans, but, you know, he's a damn good coach, and I kind of like that. I kind of like that he had a lot of experience with, you know, Steve Mariucci, John Fox, some of the other coaches he's worked for. So that was intriguing to me. I didn't really know a whole lot about his offensive system. He'd always kind of been preaching, you know, being able to adapt, and I kind of thought of, you know, New England Patriots stuff, and then, you know, we hired Clyde Christensen, so I thought, well, how does the Colts offense mesh with Denver and Chicago? So it's been a nice thing to see him kind of to pare it down and kind of work on this zone running scheme and making that really work. You know, I like his overall style. I like that he's not afraid to make moves. You know, we had, what was it, Bloody Tuesday or Garbage Tuesday a couple weeks ago when he got rid of all those guys. You know, I don't think Joe Philbin had the balls to really do those kind of things. You know, he was just kind of satisfied with leaving guys in and trying to teach them when he had bad teachers in place. I think Gase is more of the mind of, you know, if they can't learn what I'm teaching them, let's get someone in who can. And, you know, I love that mindset. I think the fact that we've hung in there against some of the better teams in the league, you know, kind of speaks volume about Gase and the whole staff altogether.
Yeah, it does. And it's really impressive to see. I think we're 2-0 since cutting Dallas Thomas. So, I mean, probably not a coincidence there. Speaking of Gase, there was one play I was curious to get your thoughts on because I don't really have clarification on this yet. Maybe you can give it to me. But the last play or the last drive of the first half when we were backed up and then Ajayi ripped off a big run and then they went hurry up or call a timeout and they got to the line of scrimmage and Tannehill came out and he looked for a deep route and he pumped and then he kind of tucked it and ran back up the middle. And Adam Gase laid into him as they went into the locker room and kind of like almost gestured to say, like, get your ass into the locker room. Like, we're done here, almost is what it looked like to me anyway. I don't know what he said, but I went ahead and looked at that play on tape. And if you look at the top of the routes for all the receivers, all the defensive backs are squatting at the top of the route and there's nowhere for Tannehill to go with the ball. So I'm not sure what he saw or what he was supposed to be doing there, but did you get any feeling from that play or from the interaction they had there before the half?
I kind of thought that he didn't throw the ball away and, you know, stop the clock. You know, granted, I don't think Miami's great in situations like that. You know, I kind of was, you know, my asshole was clenched pretty tight on that. I thought Tannehill might throw a pick or we'd fumble or something. But yeah, I think Gase made the right call to not, you know, kind of press and go for it. But that was really my thought was, you know, why didn't he throw the ball away? Other than that, though, like one of the things I've noticed in the games is, and this was kind of a concern going back to his college days, but I thought Devontae Parker really struggled with press coverage. You know, it was actually kind of funny. I found a clip of him on YouTube today where they mic'd him up last year when we played out in San Diego. And in that clip, he's talking to Rishard Matthews, who at that point was out for the season with his rib injury or whatever he had. He was just basically saying something along the lines of, well, you know, I can't get my release unless I'm stacked back. If I'm stacked back, I'm okay.
That's pretty terrifying. That's pretty scary because this is a guy that is a first-round draft pick, the 14th pick in the draft, and he should be able to deal with all kinds of coverage regardless of what it is because if you get picked that high, you should be a number one receiver that can take care of any coverage. So that's pretty scary. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I had written down here that he is having a tough time separating. So just a bad game for Devontae Parker all in all. And we need to get him going, because he's supposed to be a focal point of this offense, and he's not. And it really lacks a red zone threat and a big element to this offense when he's not going. So we had talked about the passing game a little bit, and I'll get back into – I wanted to talk about Marquise Gray, because we mentioned – touched on him earlier. But I wanted to talk about him because of how terrific he was in the blocking game and coming across formations and pulling and hitting man blocks. And they leave him out on an island a lot to make some blocks on some defensive backs, and he gets the job done. And I think he's going to really get going in the passing game here coming up pretty shortly, because they use him on a lot of that motion, and he gets some space to work with. And he was a former quarterback at Minnesota in college, so I think he can do some things with the ball in his hands. So looking forward to seeing some more out of that from him. We talked about Parker. Jarvis Landry, he's got some of the best feet I've seen from the receiver position in a while. He's quick in and out of cuts, and he's leaving defenders sometimes turned around completely. And obviously the way he drops his shoulder and runs through defenders can galvanize this offense and really get them going. He's a great energy source for this offense. However, I'm getting pretty sick of the personal fouls, or the, not the personal fouls, but the unsportsmanlike conduct penalties he's been committing. Because I think this is his third now where he's cost us 15 yards for spinning a football, which is a dumb rule. I admit that's a dumb rule, but you got to know the rules. So, there's that. There's time he jumped on the goalpost. Just all these penalties that are costing the team yards. And, it really ruins these drives for an offense that wants to run the ball and stay on schedule. So he's got to clean that up. Kenny Stills, for me, this was his best game. He had 2 third down conversions on the first drive, and he would have had another, but I had Tannehill missing him on a throw that was open. And then obviously he had the big touchdown pass in the fourth quarter for the 60 yards that put the game on ice. But he had another chance earlier in the game on a deep ball where he was behind the defender, and he was kind of running full speed. I think it was Ronald Darby who was on his heels, flat-footed, and Stills was coming at him straight with a straight line of speed. And Tannehill waits until he gets beyond the defender to throw it, and then underthrows him. So, Tannehill's got to do better on that. But Kenny Stills had a huge game. And we would be, crucified as Dolphins fans or Dolphins podcasters or whatever you want to call us if we didn't get to the quarterback. And I kind of saved him for last like I like to do. So I mentioned the play to Stills. What I did in this game, Kevin, was you and me kind of talked about how he had, going into the Pittsburgh game, he had 11 games to, check off 8 or 9 of those games as solid performances in order to keep his job going into next year. And we gave him a pass in the Pittsburgh games. We thought he played pretty well in that one. For this game, I don't think I'm going to give him a check mark. A lot of times people want to bail out the quarterback when the team wins, but I don't necessarily think that's a good idea, because you got to evaluate each individual as they do for themselves. So I had, this game plan was pretty simple. They wanted to beat him with the run and kind of give Ryan Tannehill the Alex Smith treatment, where he's making a few key plays, and he did some of the plays. But I had him at 31 dropbacks, and going back to the offensive line, 31 dropbacks, he was pressured 10 times, hit 5 times, and sacked once. I thought his feet were better in this game. I thought he got away from pressure a little bit better. He kind of made progress towards the line, and he took some no gains and some 1 yard gains instead of sacks, which is good to see. It's different than, or a lot better than losing 7 yards or 6 yards or what have you. But I thought his feet better. He escaped the pocket better. I think that was kind of a function of the rollouts and the design runs that got him into the rhythm of the game. But on those 31 dropbacks and 30 passes he threw, or no, excuse me, 25 passes that he threw, he had 11 plays where I felt like Adam Gase really said, okay, well, here's your chance to go out and make something happen in the game. The other throws were safe throws. They were scripted. They were built in, where he didn't have to go off script or make anything happen. So those are just like normal functions that any quarterback in the NFL should be able to handle. So on 11 plays, I gave him 6 check marks and 5 faults. We'll go over the faults first here real quick. On the first drive, he missed Damian Williams coming across the formation on a wide open pass where he had the sideline to run. And he had to go over the top of the defender in order to make that happen, and he just wasn't able to do it. And Williams is wide open, probably going to maybe score, at least get a first down, and he missed him. The next play was Kenny Stills open on the same drive where he was a third down in the red zone, and Kenny Stills ran a little stick route and was open if he would have anticipated the right way, but he didn't anticipate. And then the throw was behind him too, so it was a bad read and then poor accuracy. And then on the fifth drive of the game, I believe it was the second half, he missed a dump to Marquise Gray where he kind of broke the pocket and scrambled to the right, and a defender collapsed on him, and then Gray is open on the flats for a huge gain, and he makes a weird little like toss throw where he just kind of flails the ball out there. So that didn't work so well. So, you know, he's sitting there trying to make this play happen, and it's not happening for him. And the next miss I have was a throw to Landry up on the sideline where he goes for a corner route where Landry's open, and he throws it in the direction of Landry, and Landry throws his arm up and asks for the ball, and it comes down. He changes his route as the ball's coming down, and on the post corner route, the safety comes over and almost picks the pass off. So a bad throw there, bad read, just a bad all-around play. But the six good plays, he had a really good ball to Stills on an in-breaking route that was dropped, where there's a holding penalty anyways, so it wouldn't matter, but it was a good throw that was dropped by Stills. On the next drive, he had a play-action pass where he bootlegs and throws to Landry, where Landry got the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. It was a great touch and a great location. Later on the drive, he had a deep ball to Devontae Parker that looked like Parker may have lost in the sun, but the ball was located well. It was up the sideline and really well placed. He had a first down that he made with his legs. That was another check mark where I thought he kind of went off script and made something happen for himself there. And then, of course, the last throw of the game that he made, the touchdown pass to Kenny Stills, I thought was exceptional because he intentionally underthrew it, and he came back across the corner and made the play and obviously won the game for us. So those were some of the plays that I thought he was really impressive with. One thing that I also noted in my notes here on Tannehill, and actually the last thing I have on him, was his cadence and his hard counts. And a lot of times it happens in the run game where he kind of identifies the numbers in the box and makes a call based off that. But he's doing these things where he's doing a hard count, and he gets offsides here and there, but he's also getting these guys jumping into a position where they're not ready to play, and it's getting them beat off the ball. So big fan of the way he kind of controls the huddle and controls the line of scrimmage there. So Ryan Tannehill, since the 11 game, prove it, Mark, if you will. I have him at 1 for 2. Do you give him a passing grade for this game, Kevin?
I guess I kind of do because he never made a costly mistake. Buffalo, I think, had like 20-plus sacks going into the game, and we only took one. I would not give him a pass for reticent to give him, you know, that pass in ink, but you know, I just thought there were some plays where, you know, his footwork, he gets sloppy. You know, he had Damian Williams wide open on that one, and he missed it. The Stills deep ball, you know, he underthrew that one that you kind of touched on. But at the same time, you know, that third down conversion to Jarvis Landry was a great play.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
The adjustment to Stills on the touchdown pass was a great play. So, you know, I can't give him too bad of a grade for that one, but I think he needs to be better moving forward.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I kind of touched on some of those passes when you were gone, so we did get on some of those, and he's got to do better. There's some things he's got to clean up, and that's the whole team, though. I think the bye week will help a lot in that sense. So, yeah, that kind of rounds out our review of the offense and the defense. I think we covered pretty much everything, pretty much every player. So that leaves us with a few things left to get to before we're out of here. Just kind of giving you guys a little bit of update on what we're looking for here moving forward. So we have the bye week, and we're kind of trying to think of some ideas for some content. And if you want to go ahead and message me or Kevin on Twitter, I'm at @Travis_writes, and Kevin is at @KevinMD4. If you want to make suggestions to us there, or maybe even at the Perfectville Pod Twitter handle, you can go ahead and tweet us there and give us some suggestions for some content you guys want to hear about, because we have 2 weeks to kind of fill some content here for you, and we'd like to get you guys what you want to hear. So what we were looking at doing heading forward was another another roster review. We did one earlier, and you're going to be hearing it you know, after it was recorded, which is going to be pretty comedic value, or pretty good from a comedic value standpoint on some of the guys we said we wanted to cut. Jay Ajayi from Travis. So yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do a midseason review, give the players some grades, and then probably do a draft review of the previous, I don't know, 5 or 10 years of Dolphins drafts, and kind of look at what we've done and who's on the roster still and all that good stuff. So, Kevin, did you get a chance to watch any college football this weekend?
Watched a little bit. I watched the Ohio State-Penn State game kind of off and on, and I watched Alabama and Texas A&M, which was, the outcome pretty much went down the way I thought it would. Alabama's just really, really good.
They are. And the reason I brought it up was because we had talked about this player, and we kind of touched on some players in the draft in the earlier episodes because we kind of felt like that's all we had going for us was the Dolphins at 1-4, so we're looking forward to the 2017 draft already. But Kevin turned me on to a player that, I mean, he's well known, but I didn't know much about him. But Jonathan Allen on the interior line of the Crimson Tide, that guy's a stud, man. He, like you said, he can play pretty much any position he wants. He's athletic. He's got a good base, a good trunk, and a good get off, and all that stuff you look for in a powerful defensive tackle. So thanks for that tip. And did you want to talk about him at all? Or
yeah, we can. He kind of reminds me of Jarrell Casey of the Tennessee Titans. Casey had a really good season. I think it was 2 years ago. Kind of plateaued a little bit, not much, a little bit, but he's still a damn good player. That's who Allen kind of reminds me of. I'm not sure he's the greatest fit for this defense. I think he, could play sort of a five technique D end in either a 3-4 or a 4-3. Can he play that wide position in this defense? I'm not sure, but I think you could use him as an interior guy. The sack he had early in the game on Trevor Knight was just unbelievable. He like dove over the back into Trevor Knight. He's just a damn good player. I think it's too bad that if Miami keeps up on this pace, we're not going to be in a position to get him without trading up in the draft.
Yeah,
he's really impressive, and I really liked Reuben Foster as well. He might be more on the Dolphins' radar if things keep going the way they are.
Yeah, more of a mid-first-round pick, or hopefully in the 20s, if everything goes the way we hope it does.
Yeah.
And so, probably out on the Jonathan Allen sweepstakes, definitely out on the Myles Garrett sweepstakes. So, bummer there, but it is good to see the Dolphins playing winning football. And that about does it for us on this episode of the Finalysis Podcast. Once again, you can follow both of us on Twitter, @Travis_Wrights, @KevinMD4. You can contact us on the website, Welcome to Perfectville. Make sure you catch those guys' podcast with Sam and Chris. They're pretty awesome, and they give a great show every week. So catch them there. Kevin, you got anything else you want to say? And it looks like I lost Kevin again. We had some real technical difficulties in this recording, so I appreciate you guys for sticking through with us, and we're going to get it edited as best we can. But that'll do it from this episode of the Finalysis Podcast. We'll be back later this week or maybe next week with some more episodes, and stay tuned for what those are going to be, and you guys have a good rest of your night.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to welcometoperfectfield.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.